Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the maize and blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Breiler.
I just want to start by saying go blue.
Mr. Breiler!
What's going on, buddy?
It's been a minute. I feel like it's been a while since we heard our intro music, since we heard our guy.
I just want to start by saying go blue.
There he is.
It felt like home, and now it all feels so foreign to me.
I know. It's been a little bit. Let's throw a few things out.
You addicted to sex? Sex addiction?
All right. Whatever we got going on. So, I mean, obviously, it's football off season. Spring ball is going on. We got our big interview in the rear view. That's been churning out a ton of content. Basketball is getting ready to embark on the Big Ten tournament. We talked to Juwan Howard today. We'll certainly get into that here in a minute.
CJ, Mark, AJ, Tony, what's up, guys?
The whole gang, dude. The whole gang. And, yeah, one of the first things. Yeah, AJ, super early. So, here's the deal. The presser with Juwan was at like 1:30, 1:40, 1:45. Went to that. Then I was on the radio with Jamie Morris at 4 o'clock. The Pistons play at 7 o'clock tonight. As you guys probably know, I'm trying to get that bad boy off the ground. The Pistons are terrible, but they've now won 3 in a row, and they've won 6 of 8. So I'm a big-time Pistons fan. Always have been, dating way back to, you know, I mean, the bad boys were like a little before my time. I remember it, but you know what, Chris? We're what, 5, 6 years old during that?
A little on the young side.
Certainly was a huge Grant Hill fan when the Pistons drafted him and was all in on Grant Hill. Then they went.
Do you remember the Fila with the patent leather strip around the perimeter?
Oh, yeah.
Such a beautiful shoe. I remember when that came out, I was in middle school. I wanted it so bad. And now thinking back, like, Fila was such a hot shoe at that time. Yeah. And like now, do they still make Fila?
They're out there. You got to dig for them, but they're out there.
They're out.
So the Pistons play at 7 tonight, which I mean, I'm an NBA fan and a Pistons fan anyway. So like I typically would throw on some Pistons games throughout the year, but now that I'm running that site, I'm trying to take them all in, and there's press conference opportunities before and after. And anyway, let's throw it up real quick. I did a story about this, Adam Molnar. My opinion on the 90s teal Pistons jerseys. I like them.
Love it.
I know they're kind of like they're polarizing. People either hate them or love them. Like, I definitely like the red, white, and blue classics more. Like, I'm glad that the Pistons went back to the red, white, and blues and kind of updated the logos a little bit and just made it a little more modern. I love what they wear now for the most part. I like the grays. They got a city edition, like steel gray uniform that they wear now that I enjoy. But when they went to the horse logo with the teal and the yellow and the dark red with Grant Hill, I was obsessed. They weren't very good at the time, and that's part of like the weird connection.
It doesn't matter. Like, dude, that era. So the Pistons with the big gaudy, you know, the tailpipes and the, you know, the horse and all. And then you have like the throwback Vancouver Grizzlies and the throwback Toronto where they got the big raptor on it. Like, I love the Houston Rockets when Olajuwon and Barkley were in Houston.
They had
the big gaudy pinstripes. Like, I love that era from a uniform perspective. So if they can find a way to bring that back and incorporate that, I love that stuff. And I think fans love it too, man. I love the alternates. I love the throwbacks anytime a team brings it out. So it just makes it more fun.
Dude, the Bulls had the black unis with the red pinstripes. You had the Magic had the pinstripes. The Suns had the big Suns logo. The Nuggets had every jersey had some big, like,
how about, do you remember when the Atlanta Hawks went with the big hawk across the front?
Yeah, dude. I'm with you. I mean, we're the same age. We kind of came up the same kind of way into that same kind of stuff. So I like the Pistons teals. I don't think they should be their everyday uniforms, but they throw them on a handful of times next year, which they reportedly will. I'll be super into that. So anyway, long answer to the reason why we're going at 5 o'clock tonight is because the Pistons tip off at 7, and I will be tuning into that game so I can write my big post-game story afterwards. And hopefully it's to talk about a 4-game winning streak, because the Pistons haven't had one of those in like 3 seasons. So there you go. Anyway, back to the Michigan state of things, the University of Michigan Athletics. Chris, I was at the press conference today for Juwan Howard, and I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the whole thing. Probably not. It was 30 minutes long. I mean, he talked for a long time, and we asked him a bunch of questions. But I'm going to kind of break it down for you, what I saw, and get your opinion on what you think he said or did or how he went about it, because I was curious. I mean, when we got the email last night saying, you know, that we'll be in person for this press conference, it'll be with Juwan. Obviously, the Big Ten tournament starts tomorrow morning for Michigan. I really didn't know what to expect. It was our first time talking to him since post-game after the Wisconsin game when he, you know, he hit a play, hit a coach in the head, and there was, you know, punches thrown by players on both teams, that ugly scenario that played out. And I really didn't know what he was going to say. I figured it would be addressed. I mean, certainly he was going to be asked about it, but I didn't really know if he was going to spend much time on it or if it was going to be like, this is what happened, we've talked about it, now it's in the past, let's move forward. And I think, honestly, I kind of thought that's what would happen, because that's what we typically see in sports nowadays. I feel like, you know, when there's a mistake made or something kind of bad happens, you address it, you kind of talk about it, and you move on. And you hear so many different coaches and players say, we're moving on to the next thing. Not really dodging it, but like, let's not dwell and dwell and dwell. I mean, it was 2 weeks ago now at this point. It was quite a while ago. Instead, I thought Juwan absolutely knocked it out of the park. He was so apologetic. He spent so much. I mean, he came in and had like an opening statement and just started talking about it. He said, you know why I'm here. I know why you're here. First of all, I appreciate everybody being here and giving me this opportunity. I mean, like, it was just a very real moment for him for a while. Not that we should be surprised by that. Juwan Howard is a real dude. That's why I hit a guy. Let's be honest. That's why he did what he did, because he's an emotional dude. He let it get the best of him, and he's a real guy. That was an ugly, ugly thing that he did, and today was as good as he could have possibly handled it, in my opinion. I'm not going to read through word for word what he did or play the 15-minute clip, but Chris, I want to get your opinion. Do you – two-parter. First, are you surprised that he approached it that way? And secondly, what do you think of how he handled it and what he said and just how the whole thing kind of went?
No, I'm not surprised, because I think that's one of the things we've come to love about Juwan Howard is just his honesty and the fact that he is down to earth and he feels like – you're right, like he's one of the guys, you know what I mean? Like, he feels like when he's talking to you, even if it's at a press conference, like, you're getting the real thing. Like, there's no BS tied to it. And so I think what it was a masterclass in how you handle something like this. I mean, he was apologetic. He took ownership of it. He didn't dodge it. He addressed it. You know, he spent a considerable amount of time talking about it. He also addressed, you know, the things he was doing to sort of get better and to move on from it and what he's doing to better himself. And so I think, you know, you're right. It was an ugly incident in an otherwise, I don't want to use the word beautiful, but really nice career so far at the University of Michigan. And clearly he's got, you know, he's a bit of a hothead and he let it get the best of him and he's working through that. But by and large, his impact on the university, on the basketball program, on the state of Michigan has been a major positive. And so I just thought it was nice to see him come out, be honest, and now everybody can sort of move on because there's nothing left to say about it.
Yeah, it was funny. It was before he sat down, you know, it's a small room. I mean, you're not very far away from Coach Howard or any of the coaches, really, when you're doing these press conferences. They're right there. And Tom Weirott, the sports information director for basketball, asked Juwan, he got him like a water, you know, before the press conference. He said, yeah, Coach, you need anything else? And Juwan said very quietly, not to be heard by everybody, but again, you're in this small quiet room, he said, yeah, I'll probably need some tissues. And as we've come to see, Juwan Howard can let the waterworks go a little bit. He can get the tears going a little bit. And he got choked up a couple times today. He got emotional when he talked about how embarrassed he was for what he did and kind of marring and putting this.
I mean, we've all had that happen. Brandon, I know in particular you've had it happen where you do something maybe on one day and then you wake up the next day and you're like, shit, did I really do that? Did that really happen? And then it starts to set in that, okay, yeah, that really happened. And so, yeah, no, we've all been there, and that's a really shitty place to be the next day when you're trying to piece it all together and emotions have calmed down and, you know, you kind of deal with the repercussions of it. But again, handled it exactly how you would expect him to handle it. And I think everybody's aware of the situation now that it can't happen moving forward. It won't happen moving forward. He addressed it, said he's taking care of what he needs to take care of on his end to make sure it doesn't happen. And again, it was a masterclass in how you handle it.
I mean, he mentioned going to therapy, you know, like he doesn't have to put that out there for everybody to consume. I mean, that's his own business. And he put that out there with no pause, no shame. He got choked up talking about how embarrassed he was for what he did. He got choked up when he talked about Hunter Dickinson and some other players coming to his house to see how he was doing, just to check on him, make sure he was good. And he got choked up when he talked about Phil Martelli for being just a loving mentor type of assistant coach. I mean, that's a guy that works for Juwan, but you got the sense that like that dude is so important to Juwan on a personal level, far beyond basketball. And I just, again, I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on it because it did happen a couple weeks ago, but this was the first time we got a chance to talk to him about it. And he spent a lot of time on it. And I didn't really know if that was going to be the case, but I think he absolutely knocked it out of the park in terms of accepting the responsibility. I actually asked Juwan the question about Musa Diabate and Terrence Williams, because they were also suspended. Terrence was kind of doing the peacekeeper thing at first, and then he kind of got roped in, and then he did throw some punches. Musa Diabate, same thing. And Juwan said, yeah, we had a very specific conversation between me and those guys about being accountable and doing the right thing and not making stupid mistakes like that. So all the way around, man, all the way around, I thought it was handled very well by Juwan. And again, I mean, it would have been asked. He's not a dummy. He knows that was going to be the first 10 questions out of everybody's mouth. But for him to just come in the room and just start talking about it, I thought it was a big deal. I thought he did a really good job, and there you have it. Now they're on a bus headed to Indianapolis to take on Indiana tomorrow morning. And I want to talk about that briefly, and then we'll move into some football stuff. You can see people asking questions about football here, and I've got a whole bunch of topics over here that we can talk about, and we will certainly do that. But, Chris, Michigan takes on Indiana tomorrow at 11:30. They beat the Hoosiers in Bloomington 80-62 just a couple weeks ago. That was part of Michigan's only three-game winning streak of the whole season, I think. So it was a little while ago. Now they've gone 9 games in a row now, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. So tomorrow is expected to be a loss based on the trajectory. No, I don't know what's going to happen. This team has been very up and down. You expect to get Hunter Dickinson back tomorrow, healthy. He was dealing with a stomach bug against Ohio State. You get Juwan Howard back on the sidelines now. What does all of this mean for Michigan's first game in the Big Ten tournament tomorrow against Indiana? Neutral site, technically, but it is in Indiana against the Hoosiers.
I have no idea. I was looking at so going back to the Ohio State game, just looking at the way that team played, they got a lot of leadership out of the veteran guards. I think what was it? Brooks and Jones combined for what? 35 points.
Jones had a huge game. Yeah,
right. 21 points. Diabate spent 30 minutes on the floor. Brooks had 7 rebounds. I think he's averaging like a little over 2 rebounds a game on the season. He had 7 boards. And so everybody was doing everything that they needed to do collectively to get that win. And so, you know, with Juwan and Hunter coming back, this team is so up and down that I don't know, like, is that a positive, or do you just say, okay, hey guys, stay away, because that was a really good game we played, and keep, I mean, obviously you're not going to do that, but point being, I just think you're never really quite sure what you're going to get from this team from night to night. And I think that's one of the reasons why you look at March, and it's hard to envision them making a deep run given what we've seen play out here throughout the season.
I was trying to find the number real quick. I'm sure Michigan is favored by a little bit. Well, actually, I'm not sure. I would guess Michigan is favored by a little bit, but I have not seen the line. I see people in there saying Michigan by 5 or Michigan. So Michigan is favored by a bucket. Michigan is favored by 2 points. That's essentially a toss-up, in my opinion. I mean, that's a 50-50 outcome when you're talking about a basketball game. But they do have Michigan as a slight favorite. I'll put it to you right there, Chris. You got $100 you got to put on it. What are you doing? Do you think Michigan wins the game by more than 2 points? Do you think this is a nail-biter 1-point victory at the end? Or do you think Michigan is going to continue this up-down, up-down, win-loss approach that they've been on for about a month now?
I probably keep that $100 and take the family to Applebee's or something, and then know that I'm getting something in return out of that money. Look, when it comes to Michigan, like I said before, you want to trust them. You want to think, and you would think that law of averages would kick in, right? After you're going win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. At some point, the pattern's got to change and things have to be different. No better time to do it than now, obviously. So confidence level, though, I don't know. 50-50, man.
I was picking. I knew it wasn't there. I don't know why I looked at the soundboard. I just really wish I had like an Applebee's commercial queued up that I could have hit a button for. I know it's not there. Why the hell would I have an Applebee's commercial on here? But I was like, do I have anything even remotely close? I don't. So anyway, I hear you, dude. I think Michigan's gonna win, and because it's only a 2-point spread, I would say, yeah, throw the money down on Michigan. But dude, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if Michigan came out and lost by like 10 tomorrow.
And got ran off the floor in the process. You know,
one of those games where they just can't hit a shot, and you know, maybe Devontae Jones gets in foul trouble like he's done at times, and Hunter might not be all the way back. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. If I had to pick, I'll say Michigan, but like I said, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest.
That's because you're a slap.
If they lost to Indiana, even though they beat Indiana by 18 on their home court like a month ago. But that's just it. The consistency just hasn't been there. I mean, you know, you lose to Michigan State by 17, you beat them by 18, then you lose to Ohio State when you're at full strength and you had to have it on your home court. Then you go into Columbus and beat them without Dickinson, without Juwan Howard. It's just like, what is this team going to do? I do think they're in the big dance. I think the ticket was punched with the win over Ohio State. I think it's a stone cold lock if they win tomorrow. If they beat Indiana tomorrow, it's for sure. I think even if they lose to Indiana tomorrow, they're probably in, but it gets a little bit hairy. Yeah, if they do fall to the Hoosiers. So we'll see. We'll be tuning in tomorrow morning, obviously. We'll talk about it in the immediate aftermath, and we'll go from there. So we'll see how much longer we're covering basketball, at least this week, until Selection Sunday rolls around and then the tournament kicks off next week. So excited about all that. I think Michigan is in, but we will see, man. It would be really nice for them to just go ahead and win tomorrow and definitely lock it up. And so We'll see what that looks like. All right, spring football is fully underway. I don't think it's quite to the halfway. Chris must be having some audio issues. I don't think it's quite technically to the halfway point yet. I forget. I looked at the I just looked at the dates for this the other day of when Michigan's spring football actually was taking place, like each individual practice, and I don't think they were at the halfway point yet. So today is what, March 9th? So they get back to practice tomorrow, and that will be practice number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So tomorrow, March 10th, will be practice number 6 for Michigan football in the spring football calendar. Obviously, that will be capped off by an April 2nd spring game that will be on TV. And the biggest news over the last couple of days is that we probably don't get to see J.J. McCarthy at all. Chris, we knew that a little something was up. We don't have to dive all the way into it. We kind of talked about it. I mean, we were like, you know, when we did our interview, people were like, oh, where was the workout? You know, why weren't they out there running around and throwing? And we said, well, you know, JJ wants to rest the arm a little bit. They got spring ball starting the next day. We just decided not to push it. Turns out there's a little bit more to that. Jim Harbaugh opened up now. It's not speculation anymore. Jim Harbaugh said, we're working on a plan, long-term, short-term, no surgery. JJ's hurt. He's a little sore. Thoughts on this whole situation here, Chris, that sounds like JJ McCarthy's not going to be throwing the ball in live action until fall camp.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say at this point, now that everything's officially out, I mean, it was almost a month ago at this point, I knew that, or at least he had been told that there was something going on with his throwing arm, and that, you know, we didn't go too much into it. And to be quite honest, I thought JJ was just BSing me because he didn't want to throw in the interview because they had spring ball starting. And I was like, that makes sense. I wouldn't want to risk it for guys like us anyway. But and we talked about this on the phone the other night. I think going back and looking at that conversation, the fact that he told me that when he did, I mean, it would have been very easy to put out an article a month ago saying, you know, oh, Jay, could potential injury. Maybe he, you know, maybe there might be an issue there. Obviously didn't do that. And he was being a straight shooter. And I just, looking back on it in hindsight, all those conversations leading up to it, I think it's funny. But I mean, I don't know that it, when I first heard it, I was like, okay, shit, there goes, you know, the JJ McCarthy era to start the 2022 season. But then the more I thought about it, and we talked about it a little bit, you know, he's a young kid. He's a premier athlete. He clearly is okay. I mean, he did throw the ball a couple of times during the interview, and there was some sauce on it. There was a little spice on it. So he's not to the point where, you know, he can't throw the ball. Give him a few months. Let him, you know, let him get his body right. And if he enters fall camp physically ready to go, I don't see any reason why he can't win that job. To me, it's clear that he's the more talented quarterback out of the two. To me, the biggest question would be, does he have all the other stuff, the intangibles, the command of the offense? If he can get that during fall camp, I think you have to go with him and use Cade as a suitable backup. I just don't see, you know, what, look at Michigan's schedule. Look at who they got. Colorado State. Who are the first four games?
Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, Maryland.
If I want to get JJ McCarthy tuned up because he's, you know, he missed spring or he missed some summer, if I want to get that kid ready to go, there cannot be a better scenario for that situation than the first four games of the 2022 season. So at first I was a little bit, you know, bummed out about it, but at the end of the day, he's a smart kid. He's going to study the playbook. He's still going to be involved in everything that's going on. And I think he's going to be good to go by the time fall camp rolls around.
Well, that was going to be one of the next things I wanted to discuss and ask you about and see what other people were thinking about. Jim Harbaugh said, I don't really know how this works if you're a quarterback. He said, oh, no, JJ's practicing. He's just not throwing. I'm like, well, then is he practicing? Like, what does that mean? What does it mean that he's practicing but he's not throwing? I mean, when you hear Jim Harbaugh say that, what do you envision? Like, all right,
well, I think
practice, but he's not.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, he's getting behind center. He's taking the snap. He's handing the ball off to Donovan. He's going through, you know, he's going through the routines. He's probably making the reads. He's going back. You know, I don't know how all that works, but I know he's still involved and he's going through the motions. But either way you look at it, of course, it's an advantage to Cade because Cade's in the mix. He's throwing the ball. He's perfecting his craft. He's coming off of, you know, one hell of a season, by the way. He's, you know, beat Ohio State, Big Ten championship, and he's looking to build on that. And so it certainly puts McCarthy behind a little bit, but like I said, we've sat with him, we've talked with him. I have no doubt that if he enters fall camp physically ready to play ball, that mentally that part's already going to be there. He's already going to have everything else he needs. The question is, will the arm be ready? And I think it will be.
A couple things here from the comments section. AJ, thank you very much. This is Yves Saint Laurent. It was about 800, but I'm kidding.
Wow.
Totally kidding. This is from, I think, TJ Maxx. My wife got this for me for Christmas.
A Maxinista?
Probably 20 bucks. Love it. One of my favorite hoodies in the collection now. Thank you for noticing. I will let her know. She will be happy about that. And then Matthew, there is no surgery. The plan is to not have surgery at all. I think when you're talking about a 19-year-old kid, you probably want to avoid surgery at all costs. I mean, unless it's absolutely necessary, if there's a way to get through it or fix it or get back to healthy through a rest stretch regimen. You know, I mean, Jim Harbaugh said that they contacted experts all over the country to come to put together a long-term and a short-term plan so that surgery wasn't required. Well, that's what you do. I mean, you're talking about a young guy here. He hasn't even played a season in college yet. I mean, as the guy, I mean, he, you know, I don't know if he threw the ball 100 times in games last year as a backup. So I think the idea is like, let's not even bother with surgery if we can help it. And then we'll see what it looks like. We'll see what it looks like. Well, let's be honest. We'll see what it looks like every single day from now until fall. That's what, I mean, this is going to be a constantly monitored thing and he'll be checked out. Probably three or four times a week.
It was something I was thinking about earlier, and I wonder how much, and I don't know that this, I'm sure this isn't the norm, but I wonder how much Cade's success in 2021 is playing into, you know, how they're going to manage JJ's healing process and whether or not to do surgery or whether or not to rush it along or whether or not he should be doing X, Y, and Z, because you've already got an experienced veteran in there who did it for you. So there's no need to rush it along, even though you want to get JJ out there. Like, I feel like maybe if there was different circumstances in Ann Arbor that, like, there wasn't anybody on deck, or there wasn't a Cade McNamara that was there and JJ was the guy. I don't know if the treatment plan is different or if maybe surgery becomes a more viable option, but I certainly think that having a guy like Cade McNamara there probably gives Jim Harbaugh a sense of security that I don't got to rush this guy back at all. If I don't want to, I can hand the ball off 750 times during the first 4 weeks and I can go 4-0. I don't got to do a damn thing.
That's exactly what CJ is saying. It's a mix of the way Cade played last year, the soft schedule to start the season, the fact that you're pretty good everywhere else on all. I mean, there's a lot. I think you're right, Chris. There's a lot that goes into it, and there certainly is no panic when you've got a quarterback who's now entering his fourth year in the program. He just won 12 games, beat Ohio State, won the Big Ten.
I was going to say, I know we're not super scared. High on Cade here, yeah. but the kid, I mean, 12 wins, a Big Ten title. You went to the college football playoff. You beat Ohio State. And that's coming back. That's a really nice thing to have when you hear something like this with JJ. So
I can't remember if we've talked about this before or not, but Mark's question is a good one. I had it on the list. It's something that Jim Harbaugh also talked about this week. I find myself having a couple mixed thoughts about Samer still going to cornerback. He was pretty damn good as a wide receiver. I like what he brought to that position. But he was, Chris, I don't know if you remember this or if you ever paid attention to it, but he was committed to Virginia Tech as a cornerback for quite a while before he flipped to Michigan. He was a standout on both sides of the ball in high school. And, I mean, if you're being honest with yourself, he's built more like a cornerback than he is a wide receiver in terms of, like, you know, your prototypical build. He's like 5'10", maybe a 190. That's more cornerback than it is wide receiver, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And if the coaches are as – I'll combine this with another point I had on here. If the coaches are as high on guys like Darius Clemens, Amarion Walker, and Tyler Morris, the three freshman wide receivers that are already enrolled, maybe you feel like Mike Sainer still can provide more value to you on defense. It's kind of strange this late in his career. I mean, he hasn't been repping at DB over the last three seasons. But now apparently he's going to get a look there, and, you know, we'll see. Maybe he's the new nickel. We also heard from Jim Harbaugh that Rod Moore had a surgery, so he's out. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here as to reasons why now, at this stage of Mike Sainristil's career, he would move over to DB. I don't know. Thoughts on what that means for his playing time on defense or what it means for the wide receiver group as a whole.
I just think it speaks to a couple things. One, I mean, it's clear that Harbaugh and the rest of the crew are pretty high on the wide receiver core that they have right now, particularly the young guys that are there on campuses, early enrollees. And I think even though, and somebody said in the comments, Mike Sainer still has made some amazing catches throughout his career, but by and large, like, hasn't been that impactful at that position. And so I think what this really speaks to is Michigan is stacked at that position. They like what they have there. They've got bigger body targets.
Let me interject real quick. To be fair, has any receiver been super impactful at Michigan?
No. Well, no, but I mean,
compared to the most impactful
receivers, like, he has been not even close to that level. So right. I think, you know, you look at your roster, you say, we've got some dudes here that can catch the ball. What can we do with this guy? He's athletic. He's a bit on the smaller side. I think Harbaugh even said something about a potential three-way player. So special teams, defense. Yeah. To me, I think they're trying to find a place for a veteran guy who knows the game of football, who can make an impact. And they certainly have a need on the defensive side of the ball. And so that, to me, is, you know, he played that position in high school. Get him over there, see what he can do. But the reality that it could turn out to be like Mike Sainer still is like this dominant cornerback in college football, I just don't see that being the result. You know, you would love to see it play out that way.
Chase, Jim Harbaugh, he kind of just talked about the whole trio. He called them the freak show. I mean, Darius Clemens is a man, dude. That dude's 6'3", 215 already as a true freshman. So he's got the size and the body to play right out of the gate. Omarion Walker, a lot skinnier, but, you know, in terms of athleticism, he had like a 40-plus-inch vertical, I think. A little bit more lanky, a little more stretched out, 6'4", like maybe 190. And then Tyler Morris is a kid who was kind of forgotten about because he committed really early, and then he tore up his knee like real early into his senior season. But he's a guy I absolutely loved on tape, more similar to like Mike Sainer still. A little bit bigger, but not as big as the other two. And
same high school as JJ McCarthy.
Same high school as JJ McCarthy. Transferred to IMG. Nazareth Academy in Illinois, and was a big part of JJ's success early on before JJ went down to IMG. So there's a lot to like about that trio. And then you've got Ronnie Bell, and you've got Roman Wilson. If you got AJ Henning, I mean, you've got dudes in there who can make plays and who have made plays. And Sandra still was, I mean, not to knock him, but he was just another guy in there. I mean, let me ask you this, Chris. So Ronnie Bell's kind of, he's his own guy. He looked like he was going to have a monstrous breakout year last year. He gets hurt. It sucks. Whatever. He's back. We'll see what he looks like. But out of the rest of the guys that were in that room,
Mike, it's AJ Henning.
AJ Henning, Roman Wilson. Well,
I thought you were going to ask me who the comp was to Sainristo, though.
I was just going to ask, I think, yeah, those three are pretty similar. I was just going to ask, of those three, would you say that anybody was like ahead or even like half ahead above the others?
No, but like I said, I feel like if I have an AJ, like to me, AJ Henning and Mike Sainristo still are kind of the, you know, the same general type of player. And so, yeah, I think they have an embarrassment of riches at that position. And when you've got some needs at some other areas and some guys who've got some experience at those positions, you start to do it. But again, this late in his career, you know, if he hasn't really been practicing at it for two, I don't know. Can you just pick it up and be a D1 cornerback at the University of Michigan?
I don't know. And the weird thing is that they took a guy like Iman Dennis, who's almost like a Mike Sainristo still clone in terms of his build and like what, right, and flipped him over the other way. So he was playing corner. Now he's at wide receiver. It's interesting though, because Chris, maybe you can remember, it was either Roman Wilson or AJ Henning, when we had them on for one of our interviews, they said that Iman Dennis might be the fastest player on the team.
Yeah.
Was it AJ Henning?
I think it might have been Roman. I think it might have been Roman, because you were asking him about his speed. But yeah, I mean, so there you go. You take a guy out because you're going to struggle to find reps for him, and then you put another guy, you know, I don't know. We'll see what it looks like on the field.
Little bit weird there. I mean, for Dennis, it feels a little bit more like let's try to find something he can do, because he hasn't really played yet. For Sainristo still, it's like, I don't know, you were kind of in the mix there. Like you've been making some plays at receiver, but now we're going to move you over to DB. And yeah, that doesn't mean that he's never going to play offense again. Like Jim Harbaugh said, like, this is a three-way guy. He can return kicks, he can return punts, we'll play him on offense, we'll play him on defense. We'll see what it looks like. I'm intrigued by that. I try not to get too caught up in the like Jim Harbaugh gadgetry when it comes to I mean, like, he talked about Dan Villari being Taysom Hill. I freaking kids, now he's transferred.
He got me so damn excited for Dan Villari.
I'll never forgive him for that. So like, I just don't really know, you know, what exactly to expect, and it is a little bit crazy. I wanted to go to the question by CJ.
Let me ask you. Hey, I was going to say, before we get into that, another thing about what Jim Harbaugh said, and it's a guy that, you know, I think a month ago I might have put out a piece on this, but that I'm pretty high on, and think that if he follows the blueprint laid out by guys like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, he can be borderline elite. I mean, what do you think about Mike Morris and what Harbaugh said, that, you know, he is the type of guy who can be that Hutchinson Ojabo type guy?
I have that next on my list. Let's wrap up the CJ question real quick, because it's on this topic, and we'll come back to Mike Morris, because I thought that was very, very high praise when the kid hasn't played a whole lot. We'll get into that in a second. CJ, it doesn't really scare me. So he's asking, does this scare me more about the secondary, that like, oh, let's move Mike Sainristo still over here, we need some help? It really doesn't, because like, I don't think it really changes much about, I think DJ Turner's your guy on one side. I think you were going to have a battle at the other side, no matter if Mike Sainristo still is playing DB or not. So it does. No, it doesn't really worry me any more than I already was worried. I think I'm probably like most people, hoping that Will Johnson is an absolute stud from day one, and he just, as a true freshman, is the starter over there. But if he's not, you do have Jamon Green still. He played a bunch last year. You've got a couple other guys who have been around for a minute now, and maybe getting an extra look with Sainristo still. I don't know. Chris, how scared are you about the DBs, the cornerbacks specifically, I guess, in this move with Sainristo still? Does that like sprinkle more fear into the formula?
Well, it doesn't sprinkle more confidence into it. I can say that. I don't know that it makes me any more fearful of what's going on that side of the ball, particularly that position. But No, I think it's just, I think it's more of a matter of trying to find a place for Mike Sanders still to be on the football field and where he can make the most impact. I mean, even if he's highly talented and a great athlete with the ball in his hands, doesn't really make much of a difference if he's touching it one time, you know, one time each Saturday afternoon. If you can get him on the defensive side of the ball and you can get him out on the field and utilize that experience, you know, maybe you can get more out of him. But I hope it's more of like, we want to try to find a way to get this guy on the football field because we know he can be impactful, as opposed to shit, we need to turn a wide receiver into a cornerback quickly.
You know what? We need to get him on. He is a super, super smart kid. I actually love when we get him for availability. He's got a way of explaining things. I feel like he would be great to talk about some of this stuff that we're talking about. So we'll try to start looking into that a little bit, but I think that's a great discussion and just kind of peculiar. I'm not like worried about anything in either direction about like, oh damn, he's not playing receiver anymore. Or like, man, how bad are the corners that he's got? I don't have those thoughts, but it's a little weird. I think it's a little weird that he's going into his fourth year. He's been decent as a receiver. I mean, he's been decent as a receiver on a team that just doesn't use the receivers that much. Right. I mean, like, that's really more of the issue than
And I want to make that clear. I don't think his lack of production at the wide receiver position is indicative of his abilities or lack thereof. It's just the way Michigan runs their offense. I think in another offense, if Mike Sanders still was down at Texas Tech or another, you know, a spread type offense where they're throwing the ball 60 times a game, that's a guy that could average 7-8 receptions per game. Yeah. He's small, quick. He can get where he needs to be on the field. But in Michigan's offense, maybe that whole – I'm not even going to say it, but he seemed to fit the mold of what a previous gentleman was looking for. And now that it doesn't seem like they're looking for that, it doesn't seem like he fits the mold now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No,
is that phrase officially dead?
It's dead as hell.
Is it dead in Ann Arbor?
I hope it's just roasting balls out there in Miami. Just put a poster up somewhere down there and talk about it.
Wait, oh no, you don't think he said it in Miami. Do you think Josh Smith,
he said it.
Oh no, there is no way he has uttered that phrase since coming to Ann Arbor. I don't believe
guaranteed.
It.
Has to have.
I'm going to ask somebody down in Miami. I'm going to ask if he's used SIS down in Miami. I want to know.
You know, speed space from that standpoint. All right. Thank you for that.
Similar to what you see with Alabama
for that. All right. The floor is yours. Pitch your Mike Morris question, because that was on my list of things to talk about, because Jim Harbaugh, I don't know if I want to say top rope. I don't know if he top roped it, but he had some pretty big words about Mike Morris.
Yeah. I mean, I have been a big fan of Mike Morris for a little while now. He looks the part. Like when you see him get off the bus or you see him like in his gear down on the field, like
came off the bus. Yeah.
Dude looks like a dude. Right. And so I think the benefit, and I said this before, was that I think what Aiden Hutchinson did was so impactful because it wasn't just for what it did for him in the 2021 season. I think the guys around him got to see that, holy shit, man. Like if you go in and work this plan, like it can work. Now, not everybody is going to be as physically gifted as an Aiden Hutchinson, but I certainly think that you look at the growth David Ojabo experienced. And I think that you could see the same sort of thing out of Mike Morris. And so to hear Jim Harbaugh, you know, sort of reference the fact that he could be the next Aiden Hutchinson or the next David Ojabo, I feel the same way, man. He's a big dude. He's athletic. And if he follows the blueprint that was laid out by guys like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, he can be absolutely one of the best edge rushers in college football in 2022. There's no question about it.
So you're talking about a guy 6'6", roughly 280, looks the part, dude. I mean, long arms, long legs, high cut, you know, put together, can run, has enough bulk and enough size to handle the edge. I mean, he can, from a physical standpoint, he looks like he can do it all. He hasn't played a ton. I mean, when you're behind guys like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, you're not going to play a ton, but he's been out there. He's made some plays before. I don't know. We didn't see it coming from David Ojabo. We did not see that season coming from David Ojabo. So it's not crazy to say that Mike Morris could do the same type of thing next year. I would probably lean towards kind of unlikely just because, I mean, like, dude, the season that Ojabo and Hutchinson just had were off the charts. But he's poised. He's poised to do it. And for Jim Harbaugh to say something like that, that's not typically like what he does. That's not really like his thing. I thought that was very noteworthy. I thought that was very noteworthy that Jim Harbaugh offered that up like he did.
And it's really what you want to hear as a fan, because you're wondering, you know, how the hell are we going to replace two first round guys, you know, edge rusher, linebacker, how are we going to replace that? And when you hear something like that about a guy like Mike Morris, that's what you want to hear. He's kind of got that Chase Young type vibe to him. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the dreads or whatever it is, but the dude just looks like he should be eating quarterbacks alive. And I think I'll go back to what I said before. There is a blueprint now in Ann Arbor, and Aiden Hutchinson said it. And every player that walks onto that campus, if they follow it, doesn't guarantee that the results are going to be the same, but that is the blueprint to success. You get your ass in the gym, you work, you dedicate yourself, and the results come along with it. And I think that is probably the biggest difference in this team, and why Jim Harbaugh was so seemingly amped up when he came out to that press conference and talking about, you know, we're scary good right now. I think there is a mental shift in this program.
Well, the trio that we sat down and talked to, J.J. McCarthy, Andrell Anthony, Donovan Edwards, got most of the publicity for the hanging back during the Georgia loss and the photo that circulated. But there was another guy out there with them. It was Mike Morris. And the Jade McBurrows was also there. He was on crutches. It was a little different for him. I think Blake Corum was out there with them for a little bit too. So there was really like a core of five guys, six if you want to count McBurrows. True freshman, hasn't played before, was injured to finish out the year. But Mike Morris was another guy that was out there kind of soaking that in and taking in what it looks like to win that game, letting it really hit him what it felt like to lose that game. And I'm pretty sure JJ brought him up when talking about that moment and, you know, kind of the collective effort when it comes to leading this team and taking what guys like David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson and Josh Ross and Dax Hill and Brad Hawkins, Andrew Vistardis, what all those guys built, and then passing the baton and running with it. And Mike Morris is a name that was brought up by the youngsters. And this is senior. Yeah. This is a guy who's coming into his fourth year. It's time. Like, it's not out of the norm for a guy in his role to now take that step and be a dude on this team where you need some guys to step up on defense.
It is perfectly acceptable to expect Mike Morris to be one of the 100% top edge rushers, you know, if not in the country, certainly in the Big Ten next year. I mean, he's paid his dues. He's been in the program. He's got all the physical attributes you would want. Now it's just a matter of putting it together. And to be quite honest, if Mike Morris is doing his job and the Michigan football coaching staff is doing their job, he will be that, because he should be that.
And I was going to say, it's you know, new DC. So you've got Minter there now instead of McDonald, and McDonald was very, very involved in the linebackers. I don't know how much, you know, how much of his hands were on David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson as hybrid edge, you know, reapers, or we never get like a full breakdown of exactly who's doing what on a day in, day out basis when it comes to positional drills and getting guys ready for their specific position. So you've got George Helo still back coaching the linebackers. You no longer have Mike McDonald, who was a linebackers guy, and you no longer have Sean Nua. Now you have Mike Elston. So just more to factor in when we're trying to figure out who and how, who is going to and how are they going to replace Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. I like the question here from Mark. I mean, body type wise and skill set wise, you take a Mike Morris and you plug him in for Aiden Hutchinson, and you take a Braden McGregor and you plug him in for David Ojabo. You've got some Jalen Harrell sprinkled in there as well. You've got guys who can do a lot of the same things. Now, are they going to do things to the level where suddenly you've got two more top 10 draft picks next year? Probably not. I mean, odds are probably against you in that regard, but you can get close. You can make up some of that production and at least be disruptive enough on defense to kind of have the same kind of success. I mean, like, Michigan's defense wasn't all world in 2021, but it was good enough to help out the cornerbacks and to make Mike McDonald's job look, I don't want to say look easier, because I mean, he was a big part of it. There's no doubt about that. But certainly when you've got some dudes on the field like Hutchinson and Ojabo, his job was made a little easier. And we'll see if these guys can do that for for Minner? Is it Jesse Minner? I keep wanting to call
Jesse Minner. I believe it's Jesse Minner.
But yeah. I think Mike Minter played safety for the Bears in like 2003. So that's not the guy I'm talking about. Minter is now the DC, and we'll see. We'll see what that. I mean, like, you know, what kind of production would you say is expected? Like, what's the floor? There's the question right there. I'm going to throw at you, Chris. What's the sack total floor for Mike Morris, Braden McGregor? I don't even know how much he's going to be in the mix. And let's say Jalen Harrell. Those three guys, what's the sack floor for those three guys? That's damn near a burning question. That's a burning question.
Sack floor? I'll say it right now. Between the three? Oh, you got to have 20 between the three. Right?
That's a lot.
You got to have 20 between the three. You got to have
25 for Ojabo and Hutchinson?
Correct. Yeah. I think Hutchinson had 14, Ojabo had 11. And so you've got to have a guy who can do somewhat of what an Ojabo did and have two guys split what Hutchinson did. And if you can do that, and if you look at Michigan defensively, at least throughout the Harbaugh era, I mean, go back, Chase Winovich, Rashawn Garrett, look at the guys that they've had at that position, Quiddy Pay. They're cranking out dudes at that position. And so I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Michigan here. And if Jim Harbaugh says that Mike Morris is on that path, I take him at his word, because I look at what this program has done over the last, you know, 6 years, 5 years, 7 years, and they're cranking out tremendous talent there on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm not worried.
Not really sure why I thought Mike Minner played for the Bears. He played for the Panthers for his whole season. All right, I'm turning off the burning questions music because I just went down a rabbit hole by myself.
Mike, you looked like you were gone.
I was really, I don't know what you said. I have no idea what you said. Probably, I'm sure it was great.
It was great. I gotta try to massage the teat a little bit.
The defensive line teat is being massaged right now. I mean, obviously, dude, this unit's good. I don't know. I feel comfortable saying that. I don't feel like I'm hating. I don't feel like I'm shitting on anybody. I think it is completely fair to say it is obvious that this unit is going to take a step back. Is that fair?
I don't know that it's fair. I don't know that it's fair. I mean, here's the thing. I would say it's fair to expect that. Yes, it's fair to expect it. But again, given, you know, look at the situation going into 2021, and we talked about the turnover and the questions, and, you know, you have all these questions, and somehow or another, they got it done. And I think that goes back to the conversation when we were talking to those three guys. They talked about, and we spent some time talking about, what is the difference, you know, in this program, you know, when you have this kind of brotherhood or this kind of close knit, you know, vibe in the locker room. And they say that makes all the difference. And I think this team, if there's anything they're trying to carry from last year into this year, it's that brotherhood, that camaraderie, that full team thing. And you could get that. You got that sense from Jim Harbaugh when he talked about the excitement and how, you know, there's another one. It threw me off. I was looking in the comments. Yes, Upshaw. We haven't even talked about Taylor Upshaw at all.
Yeah.
I mean, where was I at, though? I was saying basically brotherhood, camaraderie, out of anything they wanted to bring from last season that I think brought success, those three guys understand that. And I think this entire program understands that. And so, yeah, they've got some things that they've got to figure out, but they return a lot of leadership. You got Ronnie Bell. You got guys that played a lot of minutes last year. I think they're going to be just fine. But I do feel bad that we haven't mentioned Taylor Upshaw once.
Well, I mean, he's kind of a, I don't want to say he's a little bit of a tweener. He's a little bit of a tweener because I don't think he's not as bursty or as twitchy as Ojabo. He's not as big as Hutchinson. So he's a little bit of a tweener when it comes to, like, is he an edge? Is he a true, like, hybrid stand-up rush guy? We'll see. I think you could say the same about Jalen Harrell too, though. He's probably a little bit smaller, but a little faster. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be really that unit is clearly the most intriguing. And maybe, I don't want to say worrisome because there's talent there, but it's just, I mean, dude, when you go from what you went from, that's the deal. It's just that last year's duo was so good.
Well, how do you replace Chris Hinton? You know, who fills that role?
I mean, there's bodies in there, but yeah.
Who's up right there with Mozzie Smith? You know, who's playing, you know, I think.
Jim Harbaugh talked about Mozzie Smith, talked about the transfer portal a little bit. Like, they're not done. You know, they're not all the way done there yet. So I've got multiple topics left that we could probably dive into next time. There's three though. We're at 49 minutes. I don't know if we can do all three, so we'll kind of do them like quick here, I guess, at the end. I don't know. Do we have like some quick discussion music? What do we usually do for
burning
that?
Questions? Is pretty quick. I always feel hot. That's pretty quick.
That's over unders.
Should we do Spartan Dog? That'll get me fired up.
Spartan, 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 Spartan Dog.
What do you think? Every time we hear that, I always wonder, like, what's he doing right now? It's 5:57. What is Spartan Dog doing right now? 5:57 on a Wednesday.
Probably getting like a size 8.5 from the back room for somebody. That's probably what he's doing. Fighting. Sorry. Damn it, dude. If anybody out there works in a shoe store,
slips the mixtape into the shoebox.
Yeah, exactly. He's still throwing CDs out there. He's got CDs in a green.
Catch me at Foot Locker.
Oh, Jesus. AJ with a top rope comp. I mean,
listen, AJ, let's not throw stones here, okay? Glass houses, okay? Come on now. Ooh, we're all men. Some of us.
It's only Wednesday. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on the beating off comments. We'll save that for Friday.
I'm so glad that our first show back in a little while, we've already talked about beating off. It's already come up.
I mean, what do you expect? That's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we do. Good. That's what we do. I don't know if I want to say that as loudly and as proudly as I just did, but there you go. All right. Three things that Jim Harbaugh said that I find polarizing. I find myself saying, God damn it, dude. There's a Harbaugh thing. First one, Chris, tell me if this is too much. He's throwing – I'm going to sound like a dick because they just did what they did in 2021. He's throwing terms out like scary good. He says, we're scary good, right? The state of the program is scary good. So to me, my immediate thought is like that's him trying to like pump up more than because of what he just did. He tried to leave and go to the NFL. And now he's back, and so he has to talk like this. Is that – what do you think?
I mean, the guy's – here's the thing. Is a guy allowed to pump up his program? He just won a Big Ten title. Okay. He just went to the college football playoff. He just beat Ohio State. If there's any year for Jim Harbaugh to go into the new season – with his chest puffed out a little bit, he's earned it this year. He didn't earn it years one through six, but he earned it year seven. So if he says this team is scary good, I think he's earned the right to say it.
Yeah, you're right. You're not wrong. I just feel like there's
if it was on the heels of a 2-4 season, then I would say, come on, man. But like, do something.
I don't disagree with you, but I feel like there's a mixture of what I'm saying as well. He's got to like front a little bit because he knows that we all know he tried to dip.
Yeah, but okay. But here's the thing: do you think he gives a shit? Do you think he cares? Right. That's
We've
the thing
about this before.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care that you might be offended or fans might. He doesn't give it. Like he's back in Michigan. He's coaching. I don't even know that his brain goes to that realm where like, gee, I wonder what people think about. I just don't think he operates that way.
All right. This one is a concern that I had from the jump when it started to get pieced together, how this was going to look. And he first addressed it. He first answered the question in the way that he always answers questions, which I hate. And then he kind of laughed a little bit and came back to it and gave the answer that I was worried about. The offensive play calling, right? He was asked directly, you know, Josh Gattis is gone. How does offensive play calling look? And he said, well, Sherrone Moore's coaching the offensive line, and Ron Bellamy's coaching the receivers. Mike Hart's coaching the running backs, and Grant Newsom's coaching the tight ends. And Matt, this is what he does, right? He goes down. He'll list every player on the roster when you ask, like, who's looking good on offense?
By the time you get halfway through the question, you forgot what you asked. And so whatever answer he gives, it's like, all right.
And I think somebody's even said, like, we know who's on the staff. Can we get some answers about who's calling plays? And he said, oh, that's what you mean. That's what you mean. And he said something along the lines of, it's going to be a collaboration between everybody. I don't actually think that's entirely true. Like, somebody's going to have to be calling the plays on Saturdays. But I don't like this approach that I feel like it's I feel like that's what this is. I feel like we're getting way too many cooks in the kitchen instead of it just being one dude who's an offensive mind handling what goes out on the field on Saturday. Like, I get throughout the course of the week, all the coaches are working together and they're putting game plans in and they're talking about stuff in meetings. I just find myself being a little bit concerned about this, man. I do. So what are your thoughts on how he discussed that?
How he discussed what? I'm sorry, I just got distracted. An email came through from Dave Abloff for player availability.
Just the offensive play calling and the
Of
in the kitchen and everybody kind of being
– Time out. I got to echo. Okay. Let me come right back in.
So as Chris gets ready to come back in, you've got two co-offensive coordinators in by title. So you know that both of them are going to be involved in Matt Weiss and Sherrone Moore. And then you talk about a run game coordinator in Mike Hart. You talk about Ron Bellamy, who is now much more comfortable with wide receivers. I mean, he did a fine job coaching the safeties, but he is a wide receiver, so he's going to feel at home there. You got a new guy in Grant Newsom. I wouldn't expect him to have a ton of input, but he's been doing some analyst stuff for multiple seasons, so he's been involved in that. Back to you, Chris. So many cooks in the kitchen. I don't love it. It worries me a little bit.
I don't love it either. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about. You remember when Michigan hired Courtney Morgan? And the thing we were talking about with that hire was like, good for him. Like, you know, I'm sure his background would help, but you would rather have somebody who's been in that position, kicking ass at that position, doing that job. And that's how I feel about, I mean, offensive coordinator. You know what I mean? Like, if you're saying this is going to be a collective effort between a group, like, I'm less excited about that than the idea of we've got one hell of an offensive coordinator and he's going to be calling this game. So that's what I'd rather have. But at the same time, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to guys like Sherrone Moore and Matt Weiss. I mean, they have earned that given their impact on what they did last year. And so, yeah, I'm concerned about it. I have questions about it. But again, I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt, especially Sherrone Moore. Sherrone Moore has been with this program for a long time. He's come up through the ranks. We've talked about this before. He's one of the most tenured coaches outside of Jay Harbaugh. You know, this has been a long time coming for him. And you would like to see ideally one guy call the shots. But, you know, who even knows if that's the truth from Jim? Are you really sure that's how it's going to be?
That's it, too. I want to know more about what that will look like. But I also, I'm with you. What you just said kind of really, you know, really put it in a nice, pretty box for me. Like, I want a guy who's like, damn, that guy's an offensive genius. They don't have that. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I think I like every single dude on the offensive staff, like, a lot. I'm super high on Sherrone Moore. I love the potential for Ron Bellamy moving forward. Mike Hart's Mike Hart. I mean, he's done a great job just about everywhere he's been. Look at what the running backs did under his tutelage last year. Love him. Matt Weiss, I mean, he's been there a year. I don't know exactly, you know, what he did last year, but Harbaugh clearly likes him a lot and thinks he's important to what they do. Grant Newsom, you've heard me talk about him before, even though it's his first year on the job. I get it. I like all of them, but, like, I'm with you. Give me just a superstar play caller, and that's it. That's the dude. You know that's the dude. There's no doubt about it. They don't have that right now, and I don't like that approach as much. We'll see how it looks. I do like that, you know, on that totem pole, Sherrone Moore's at the top. That gives me some peace of mind. But I'd much rather have the way that you described it.
And on the top because he's earned it. I think that's an important distinction.
Sure.
Like I love like the fact that he's there. It's not like they brought somebody in from the outside that I'm questioning. Like this guy has paid his dues, you know, within the Michigan football program. And by all accounts, you talk to players, anybody who's had any interaction with Sherrone Moore, they love him. He is a net positive to everything he touches. So hopefully this will be a good
way
thing.
To put it. And we will close out with this. We will close out with this. Oh, Jimmy, you mother. He said yesterday, Chris,
Jimmy, won't you be my dad? Ooh.
This was always part of the plan. I came to Michigan on a 7-year deal. Just doing what I'm doing. 7-year deal. Thought I'd go check the NFL out. I don't want it. I'm back. When he said that, I almost threw my laptop across the room. Dude, that's bullshit. Come on, Jim. There's no
that's the way. One, yeah, okay, that's the one thing from the press conference that I didn't like. It was 100% bullshit. He knew it. Everybody that was in the room knew it. But I think he had to, you know, what else are you going to say? What is, you're not going to stand up there and say, well, nobody wanted me, so here I am, and let's go win an Natty. You know,
I get that. This is another one of those things. Like, you don't have to say it. Just don't say that. Just say something else that's actually true. Can we do that? I can think of multiple examples.
The truth?
I think back to, like, you know, Shea Patterson, I don't know. He goes, like, 4-for-19 for 89 yards, a touchdown, and 3 picks. And Jim's like, it's one of the best quarterback performances I've ever seen. I'm like, no, it's not. No, it's not. By any metric ever at the position, no, it's not. You don't need to say that. I know he doesn't care. This is kind of like what he does. But when he said that, I bet the collective, like, everywhere, every person who saw that and heard it probably had to do, like, the same type of thing.
Not every person.
Well,
there's a lot of people in Ann Arbor who truly believe, I'm not going to use the L word, but they still maintain leverage.
You said you weren't going to use it.
I know, but I didn't think you knew where I was going. So
I thought you were going to say love. I thought you were going to say love. No,
that's why I said it.
People that love Jim Harbaugh. That's also true. His bathwater goes down smooth for some folks. I'll put it that way. Doesn't it? Do you think it, like, if they could buy, like, a case, like a Dirty 30 of Jim Harbaugh bathwater, they'd be in line every week to get that shit.
Yeah. Some people who cover him.
Oh, whoa.
I'm just saying. You didn't say it. I said it.
All right.
I said it. It's something I've noticed.
Okay. We're an hour in. I think that was a hell of a show to just kind of come together. I mean, we did
weird. We just kind of, we were like doing dad stuff. And then like you called me and you were like, hey man, you want to do a show? And I was like, yeah, let's do a show. And then we hopped on.
Had to do it that way. I mean, big stuff. Obviously we got a chance to talk to Jim Harbaugh yesterday, got Juwan Howard today. The Hoopers take on Indiana tomorrow in Indianapolis. We're not really supposed to announce it, but whatever. We get a chance to talk to some players tomorrow. So that's cool. And so, yeah, there's stuff going on. Michigan is nearing the halfway point of spring football, and then obviously the game will be on April 2nd. I'm excited about that. We didn't even talk about this. We'll leave it for next time. Pure Michigan.
Pure, I'm excited.
Michigan.
I've been hearing Tim Allen in my dreams. That's where I'm at. No, not that.
Yeah. That's Tim Allen, bro.
I know that, but that's not what I'm hearing in my dreams. It's a soft, soothing voice of pure Michigan.
I put on the
can we get that as a drop? We need that.
Done. Making a note right now. Mine or Tim's? Tim's.
Tim's.
If you go on YouTube, there is a 16 to 18 minute.
Is it just all of them?
Compilation of every grunt that Tim Allen made on Home Improvement from start to finish.
We're going to have that up on the YouTube page. Make sure you go and check it out.
It's glorious. It is glorious.
Oh.
Tim Allen is basically my dad on that show. Like the high
rise. Everybody's dad. Tim Allen is my dad. John Goodman is my dad.
Great.
The dude from Family Matters is my dad.
It's the best.
Carl Winslow.
Tim Allen. Well,
I mean, I grew up with Carl Winslow.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Carl Winslow.
Step by step. Patrick Brown. Duffy, I think was his name.
Cousin Cody, bro? Cousin Cody? Dude, where are we going? What is happening right now? We had such an awesome show. A great ending. And then I grunted. We're now talking about the whole TGIF.
Cody from Step by Step.
Think that guy's dead.
Whatever happened? Oh, rest in peace, Bob Saget, obviously.
Well,
America's dad.
America's dad. All right, dude. We got to go. It's an hour and 5 minutes in now. It's time to go. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will we'll see what it looks like on a Friday, right? I think we might see what it looks like on a Friday.
Meredith knows.
Given what happens with a Michigan basketball team, again, we are going to get some player availability tomorrow, so that's cool. We'll probably be back on Friday to talk a little bit more of this stuff. And there's a couple other topics that we didn't even get to as we got to the hour moment. So milk the teat.
Massage the teat. Get it.
Take care, everybody.